Thank you so much. That's so cool. Also, I love the fact that we're singing a song called Make Room while doing a Making Room series. I don't know if anyone else has picked up on that, but I really love it. Anyway, just a side note there. But as I've been thinking over the last little while what I was going to preach on today, I find myself thinking that this should be easy, right? If we're talking about making room in not only our physical spaces, but also in our hearts, then this was going to be an easy sermon for me to write because I'm as extroverted as they come, right? I'm pretty keen to make more and more room for people physically and in my heart. But then I was talking to someone about a person that, to put it bluntly, I don't like. I really struggle to get along with them, and so instead I avoid them as much as possible. And if I can be really honest, I talk bad about them behind their back. I appreciate the giggles and not the sighs of disappointment. But as I was talking... As I was talking to my friend about them the other day, I felt God say, "Are you making room for them? Is this what making room in your heart looks like?" And I realized that although I love to be around people, I love to meet new people, and I love to make new friends, I don't often make room for people that I don't want to make room for. And I don't often love those that I don't want to love. And I don't often show grace to those that I think don't deserve it. And it was in that moment that I realized that maybe this wasn't going to be an easy sermon to write, and that this sermon was going to be preaching to me just as much as it is preaching to you. But it got me thinking about what the Bible tells us to do, or how to treat those that we don't like, or those that are different to us. There are so many examples in the Bible, and really just the life of Jesus alone is enough to show us how we're meant to treat people. But I want to focus on two other stories in the Bible today. The first is a well-known one. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. In Luke 10, a lawyer is asking Jesus how he gets eternal life. And Jesus basically tells him to answer his own question and says, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And among other things, this lawyer says that we're told to love our neighbor. And Jesus tells him that he's right. And then the lawyer asks him another question, and I think it's so interesting what the Bible says here. In verse 29, it says, "But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?'" He wanted to justify himself. He wanted to find a loophole. He wanted to find an excuse for not treating everyone with love, and he wanted a reason to not have to make room in his heart for those that he didn't like. But here is where we get the parable itself. Starting in verse 30, it says this. In reply, Jesus said, "A man..." Now, it's important to note here that even though it doesn't say a Jewish man, it's implied that he is a Jew, right? "Was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road." Thank goodness, right? A priest. He will do the right thing. A God-loving, God-fearing priest who is meant to care for everyone, he will stop and help. "And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side." Never mind, okay. But it's okay. Jesus, I'm sure, has another God-loving Christian coming down the road to help, right? And then verse 32 says, "So too a Levite." Here's what Jesus was planning, right? A Levite from the tribe of Levi, from Israel itself, right? God's chosen people. Now Levites, they love Jesus, right? According to the law, all priests had to be a Levite. So basically, all priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests. But based on the priest's track record, maybe it's not looking too good for the Levite either. It says, "When he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side." What is up with these people? Both people that should theoretically love God and keep his law, but refuse to show compassion for this person half dead on the road. Now, there's no saying exactly where this person was lying, but some parts of the road from Jerusalem to Jericho are so narrow. So when it says that they pass by on the other side, I'm not picturing a highway with 8 lanes that you can give that half-dead person a wide berth. It probably looked more like this. Just a little step to the side to make sure that they didn't touch him. In some places, right, that road was so narrow that they would have had to literally step over him. But I'm going to give these great priests and great Levites the benefit of the doubt here and say that the road was at least wide enough for them to sidestep the dying man, right? Here we have two people who should be the best at making room. They are Christians after all. They should be the best at loving their neighbor as themselves because they love God. But what we actually see is two people that regardless of their faith and regardless of their relationship with God, they refuse to make room in their hearts for the person that needs it the most. But I'm sure that most of us probably would have heard this parable before, and we know that it doesn't stop there. Carrying on in verse 33, it says this, but a Samaritan, oh no, not a Samaritan, right? They hate the Jews. There is no good history between Jews and Samaritans. There is no way that he's going to help this man, right? As he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii. And just to make sure you realize how much that is about 2 days' wages. Now, I don't know how much you all make, but 2 days' wages is a lot of money for me to spend on someone who I shouldn't like. I would miss 2 days' wages, right? But this Samaritan used it anyway. And then it says, he gave them to the innkeeper, look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Not only has he already spent 2 days' wages on him, but he's willing to spend more. Talk about making room for someone he doesn't like. He's literally paying for the room for someone he doesn't like. See, the Good Samaritan has every reason not to help this man. Definitely a lot more reasons than the priest and the Levite, but he did it anyway. He was the one who made room and treated this man like a neighbor. He was willing to give up his time, resources, and money for this man in need, even though it would have been socially acceptable to leave him there. Even though others had already left him there, and even though it made sense for him to not like the Jews. I think we can learn so much from this Good Samaritan. Now, I'm sure that a lot of you are much better than me, and you probably love most people, but I would pretty confidently say that we all have someone that we don't get along with very well. Someone who grinds our gears, someone who we would prefer to walk on the other side of the road from. Now, I'm not going to ask for anyone to say the name of the person you don't like, because I would be too worried that someone would say my name. So I'm not going to do that. But I'm sure you've all got someone in mind, right? Now, would you be willing to give up your time, resources, and money for them? Would you be willing to stop in your tracks, to stop what you're doing if they asked for help? Would you be willing to make room for them? And I mean physically and make room in your heart for them. Now, if you answered yes to all those questions, then you are a much better Christian than I am, because I know that I would struggle to make room for those that I don't like, and I probably wouldn't give up my time, money, or resources for someone that I don't like. But that is exactly what we are called to do. We are called to love those we don't want to love, and we are called to help those that we don't want to help. We are called to make room for those that we don't want to make room for. Now I want to jump over to another story in the Bible, and this is the story of Jonah. Now we read in Jonah, funnily enough, that Jonah was told by God to go to Nineveh and preach against it. Basically, go to Nineveh, tell them to repent so that I can save them. We very quickly, I mean literally the next verse, read that Jonah ran away and headed for somewhere else on a ship. But God wasn't a very big fan of that, so he sent a storm. Now, everyone on the boat is panicking until eventually Jonah's like, guys, this is kind of my fault. I'll jump off, like, throw me off and you'll be saved, right? I'll save you guys. Interesting that he was willing to save these guys, but not the Ninevites. But anyway, Jonah then gets swallowed by a big fish, chills in there for 3 days and 3 nights before the fish spits up Jonah on dry land. And then Jonah finally obeys God, goes to Nineveh, and Nineveh repents and they're saved. Now, it's important to note here that Jonah was an Israelite, right? And the people of Nineveh were obviously Ninevites. Now, Nineveh and Israel were long-time enemies. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria, and the Assyrian Empire had already defeated and conquered some of Israel's land, and they were continuing to expand, so Israel was still at risk. The Israelites knew that at any moment, Nineveh and the Assyrian Empire could invade and would likely show no mercy. The Ninevites did not like the Israelites and vice versa. So it makes sense that Jonah would run away. So with that in mind, I want to ask you, who are you Jonah-ing? Who are you running away from? Who don't you want to save? See, Jonah didn't want to make room for these people. I can see him thinking to himself, why Nineveh? After all they've done to your people, after the way they've treated us, after the way they live their lives, they're the people you want to save? Well, I'm not having any part of it. Find someone else. To be honest, I don't really blame him. I probably wouldn't want to go either. But in case you didn't get a ticket to my train of thought here, this is sounding kind of similar to the Good Samaritan. Now, we do have the difference of one doing it right away and one needing some, shall we say, further convincing. But the thing that these two both have in common is that they're saving people that they had every reason not to. Saving people that it would have been socially acceptable not to save. And making room for people that they didn't want to make room for. Jonah was sent to save the people that were a threat to his country. Jonah was sent to save the people that had already conquered parts of his country and destroyed their cities. Jonah was sent to save the people that he liked the least. Are you willing to go above and beyond to save the person you like the least? Are you willing to love those that you don't want to love? And are you willing to make room for those that you don't want to make room for? Now, unsurprisingly, I'm going to quote a song. There's a song I love so much. It's called Live About It by Jamie Grace. And the whole song is talking about how we can't just sing songs about it. We can't just write things about it, but we need to live about it, right? And the it that she's referring to is loving everyone. The whole song ends by saying, we can't call it love if we don't love even when we don't want to love. Which in itself is such an incredibly powerful line, but the bridge before it lists some people that maybe we don't want to love. And it says this, the broken, the burdened, imprisoned and poor, the wealthy, the widowed, skin different than yours. The orphan, the outcasts who beg and who don't, the hungry, the hurting and without a home, the people who pray to a God we don't serve, the protester marching for what we don't want, the stranger who knocks on our door without code, just begging for freedom that challenges ours. This is quite a confronting but such a powerful song because it really makes you think about whether or not you're loving in the way that we're called to love. Are you willing to make room for someone that is marching in a protest that goes against what you believe? Are you willing to make room for someone who has a different religion? Are you willing to make room for someone who has a different sexuality? Are you willing to make room for someone who has a different ethnicity? Are you willing to make room for someone who's homeless? Are you willing to make room for someone who's been in prison? Are you willing to make room for that colleague that you don't get along with? Are you willing to make room for someone who you don't want to make room for? Luke 6 verse 35 tells us to love our enemies and do good to them. So I can tell you right now, no matter what your differences are or how you feel about someone, love is more important. Love has to be more important because just as I quoted earlier, you can't call it love if you don't love even when you don't want to love. And you can't love someone the way that God calls us to love without making room for them. Making room for them in this building and making room for them in your hearts and your life. So, what does that look like? What practical steps can we take to love those that we don't get along with and make room for them anyway? A rule that I try to live by, emphasis on the try, is that if I'm complaining about someone more than I'm praying about them, then I'm the one with the problem, right? As much as they might get on my nerves, they might push all my buttons, if I'm only complaining about them and not praying about them, then it's my heart that's the issue, not theirs. Now, I want to clarify here. When I say praying about them, I don't mean, Lord, will you make them less annoying? Or, Lord, will you keep them away from me? That's not the types of prayers that I'm talking about. When I say praying about someone, I really mean praying for them. Saying prayers like this, Lord, will you bless that person? Lord, will you wrap them in your love and your comfort and your peace? See, we need to walk a road of prayer instead of a road of complaints. I heard this analogy the other day, and it went something like this. When you go to listen to an orchestra and they play the song badly, do you blame the orchestra or do you blame Mozart? Because most of the time, we would probably blame the orchestra, right? Because it's not Mozart's fault that they've portrayed him badly. And it would be nice if it was the same for Christians and God. But when we betray God badly, people are often not blaming us, they're blaming him. Even though it's not God's fault that we're complaining, it's not God's fault that we're not loving people the way that we should, it's not God's fault that we're not making room for those that are different to us. But see, we're that bad orchestra, but the people around us are blaming Mozart. When we pray for people instead of complain about them, we start to play a bit better. The music starts to sound more like what God intended. Praying for people will portray God the way that he's meant to be portrayed. And hopefully, just hopefully, we can stop being the orchestra that plays God badly. See, they say that practice makes permanent, perfect, but really practice makes permanent. Whatever you consistently practice will become the way that you permanently do it. If you practice dealing with your emotions by complaining, then that's the permanent habit that you'll make. But if you start to slowly but surely practice praying through your emotions, then that will become the permanent habit that you'll make. So let's stop complaining and start praying. Now, another practical step that we can take to make room for those we don't want to make room for is to start finding ways to interact with them, spend time with them. Now, I know that sounds like the opposite of what we want to do sometimes, but how are we ever going to love them and make room for them if we don't spend time with them? I promise you, someone will never feel loved from a distance. Now, that's going to look different for everyone, but start small, just a conversation. Build it up from there. Maybe you go out for coffee or maybe lunch, but as you begin to spend more and more time with them, pray that God would help you to see them the way that he sees them and love them the way that he loves them. If you avoid someone, then that's always going to be the way you think of them, someone worth avoiding. But Jesus sees them as someone worth dying for. If you spend time with them and start seeing them through the lens of Jesus, then you're going to start seeing them as someone worth spending time with, someone worth praying for, someone worth loving, and someone worth making room for. Now, one final practical step that we can take to make room for those that we don't want to make room for is to practice forgiveness. Forgive them. Now, this is easier said than done. Believe me, I know, but holding on to resentment and bitterness towards someone is never going to make room for them. Now, I've recently begun a forgiveness journey with my dad, which has been pretty difficult at times, right? Without going into too much detail, my dad walked out on me and my family when I was 4 and then did everything possible, including breaking the law, fleeing the country and becoming another country's resident just to make sure he didn't have to help us financially. So while he was making his millions, literally making his millions, my mum was left to raise 5 kids on her own with no money and no home. growing up without a dad is becoming more and more common, unfortunately. But back then, I was the only one of my friends who came from a broken home. I was the only one of my friends who didn't know whether or not we had enough money to have dinner that night. Now, my mum is the best mum that anybody could ask for, and she sacrificed everything her entire life to raise us five kids. But I couldn't help but build up resentment towards my dad for what he had done to my mum and then continued to do to us every day by not helping financially. Now, that's like 22 years of resentment, which is a lot, but about halfway through last year, I felt the push from God and then the push from my small group leader to start the journey of forgiveness. Now, I lived in Pegasus at the time, so early one morning, I went for a walk around the lake and I cried my eyes out to God and then cried even more as I told my dad that I forgave him. Now, that's not to say that resentment doesn't still come at times. It's not to say that 22 years of hurt just went away in an instant. But I have seen blessings come as a direct result of choosing forgiveness. Things that may seem small or materialistic, but never would have happened if I had chosen resentment instead of forgiveness. I spent 22 years of my life refusing to make room for my dad. He was the one that walked out anyway, right? I was only four. How could any of these feelings be my fault? But I realized that not once in the following 22 years had I stopped to do what God tells us to do. See, how could I continue to ask for forgiveness when I was refusing to forgive the one person that I needed to the most? The one person who I needed to make room for the most. Now, I don't know who you need to forgive. I don't know why you need to forgive them, but I do know that there's probably still hurt there. And I do know that forgiveness isn't easy, but I also know that forgiveness is always the right choice. Forgiveness is the only way to make room for someone that we don't want to make room for. But the great thing about it is it doesn't just make room for them and maybe make them feel welcome in a space or in your life again, but it makes you feel better. You begin to feel what it's like to have that room back in your heart and that you will feel the blessings because of it. God made room for you first, so the least we can do is make room for those that we don't want to make room for.